Are you struggling with fear, depression, or anxiety? Are you in search of meaning and purpose? Would you like help navigating your current life circumstances? Tarot can help. Tarot is a powerful tool for healing, introspection, and spiritual awakening. The Esoteric Toolkit is a synthesis of ancient wisdom and modern science. It consists of tarot, numerology, astrology, and the Hermetic principles in conjunction with the modern science of consciousness. The revelation and application of this knowledge gives you the tools you need to help master your life, organize your mind, and overcome depression, fear, and anxiety. Learn to manifest your dreams and come into alignment with your highest self and the universe. Book your private one-on-one tarot reading today. Click the link in the description or go to www.theorderofchaosmagic.com. You can also find monthly tarot packages, a private Discord community featuring shadow work, and Mercury retrograde support groups, and much more by becoming a patron at patreon.com/theorderofchaos.
Welcome back to the Order of Chaos podcast. My name is Sanrei, and my guest today is Cressida Stone. Cressida is a devotee of Santa Muerte, a doctor of religious studies, and author of Secrets of Santa Muerte. Cressida, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. And I'm going to correct you a little bit there. I'm actually a doctor of anthropology from Oxford University, but for the longest time, like Santa Muerte, who is called Lady of the Shadows, I was trying to keep my identity in the shadows. This is not about my personality, who I am. And, you know, I wanted to keep my private life separate from this life and also keep the lives of those I've written about private and honor their privacy as well.
Yeah, I get that. And I find that the more present you are publicly, the harder that is to do. You know, and so that's just something that we all have to deal with as we grow in this industry. I don't know what you want to call it, in the witchy space and the YouTube space, all of that stuff. Yeah, I totally get it. But it's awesome that you're doing interviews now, because the last time we did this, we did it via email. I had no idea who you were, or what you looked like, or any of this. I was wondering, and so it's awesome that you're out there now.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so let's just dive right into this. And I want to get the obvious elephant in the room question out of the way first. Is the worship or working with Santa Muerte a closed practice?
No, it is not. I mean, I'm a devotee of Santa Muerte through and through. I mean, it's taken over my life, you know, becoming close to death, life death, I like to call her. And anybody, you know, who's trying to claim that it's a closed practice or cultural appropriation, generally those people haven't been to Mexico. They've not spoken to the most important people in Santa Muerte devotion, the leaders of chapels, or even devotees, you know, lay people in the street. And everybody that I have spoken to in Mexico, from Doña Queta, who is the leader, the founder of the most renowned, important altar chapel to Santa Muerte, which is in Mexico City, from Doña Queta to anybody else, to any other leader I've spoken to, they will all tell you that death is for everyone, that this is not a closed practice, because we all die, right? It's an ineluctable truth, an inevitable fact. And, you know, talking of which, that has been part of Mexican culture for just absolutely years and years and years, to the extent that we can look at Aztec poetry dating back from 15th century Mexico. I'm thinking of Nezahualcoyotl, a famous Mexica poet who was king of a state over there. And I'm just going to read something to you that I just found so beautiful. He said, "Even if life were jade, it would fall apart. Even if life were gold, it would wear away. Even if life were made of quetzal feathers, it would be torn apart. Vanished are all these glories, just as the fearful smoke vanishes that belches forth from the infernal fires of Popocatépetl. Nothing recalls them, but perhaps only the written page. So when I've been to Mexico and I've asked people, you know, can I practice this faith? Is it open to everyone? Of course, they will tell you that it is, because everybody dies. So that is just an ineluctable truth that we have to contend with. And I do think that, having said that, not everybody dies as fast or is as likely to die. Having worked with Santa Muerte and worked with devotees in Mexico, I've been put in touch with people who live in very difficult situations, and it's been very humbling. I'm very grateful to be in this position to write about this. And, you know, that's the other thing that people can charge you for, or should you be writing about this? But, you know, the people that I've met, who many of whom are close to death or who have lived in places in extreme poverty, with very little educational opportunities. I mean, some of the people that I've actually learned the most from cannot read nor write, and never had educational opportunities. I'm thinking of the lady that I describe in the book with the long plait down her back, the lady whose age is unknown, the sabia, the wise woman. You know, she started working at age 8. She left home. She cannot read nor write. And yet, for all the books that I've read in the world, because I do have a doctorate, nobody has taught me so much as you know, being with her, spending time with her. But having said all of that, while we might cry cultural appropriation, should you be writing about that, very few people have opportunities to write about Santa Muerte, to publish. And I'm very, very grateful that I have that opportunity. And it is because I've had an education, because I know how to write. I mean, I submitted my book to a bunch of different publishing houses before it was accepted. It was already hard for me. So it's very, you know, it's almost impossible for someone in rural Mexico to imagine having access to write that book. Even being able to speak English is such an absolute privilege. And I see that in Mexico, because, you know, some of the people I work with are indigenous and speak Spanish with an accent, and even get teased for not speaking Spanish supposedly properly. So to speak English, I mean, we overrate what a great privilege that is, and how rare it is to actually be able to write a book. So when I was working with these people, they were actually grateful to me, even though, you know, I was thanking them all the time for sharing this knowledge. They were grateful to me for putting this knowledge out there and for changing the opinion on Santa Muerte, because, as we all know, she's been labeled as a narco saint. Mm-hmm. Some authors have called her narco satanic.
Yep.
And so to actually write a book that honored her, that gives her the dignity and the respect that she deserves, also in turn gives people from Mexico who are devotees honor and dignity.
Yeah. You know what? That's such a good point. And, you know, I don't talk about this a whole lot on this show, but my heritage, my father's father came from Mexico. My father was a Mexican man, much darker skin than I. And we spent a lot of time in Mexico when I was a kid. And really the first profound spiritual awakening experience I ever had, I was probably maybe 9 or 10, not much older than my son is now. And this is back when they would allow you to just walk up the pyramids. And my dad and I, we walked up the Pyramid of the Sun at Teotihuacan, and we sat there and just sat there. And I just remember how incredibly powerful it felt to sit on top of that pyramid, you know, and I didn't know why. I was a little kid. I didn't know what I was experiencing, but it was just so overwhelmingly powerful. And I miss going to Mexico. It's something we did frequently up until my father died. And we did make another trip after that, but I haven't been in probably 20 years. But anyways, I'm just kind of ranting here. But something that really bothers me in the occult space all over is when people latch on to particular deities for an aesthetic reason, because it's edgy or it's cool. And that's been done so much to Santa Muerte. And it changes people's perception of death as being this beautiful, inevitable part of life, the thing that makes life possible, to just, you know, some edgy, as you're saying, narco deity.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for sharing your beautiful experiences about the pyramids with your father. And I'm sorry for his passing. And I hope you get back to Mexico soon.
I will. I want to take my son.
Yeah, sure. You should. And, you know, the Mexican people that I've met, that I've spent time with, are absolutely amazing, generous. People will tell you it's dangerous. Of course it is. But, you know, if you stay wise, you know, and don't go out to dangerous places at night, don't get yourself into trouble, you know, you're going to be okay. If you think you can spend time in Barrio Tepito at night, strolling the streets, then you're in for a different story. But, you know, so getting back to what you were saying, yeah, I mean, maybe that is cultural appropriation, when we misappropriate something spiritual from another tradition and use it just for a fashion statement without really understanding what that is. But I think, you know, most devotees that I've been in touch with, generally, I mean, you know, maybe I haven't met those who don't, but generally those that I'm in contact with that write to me, or that have reached out to me, turn to her, you know, for spiritual favors. And she's wonderful because she's so practical. And we can turn to Santa Muerte for love. We can turn to Santa Muerte for sex, for money, for opening our paths, for getting a great job that we always dreamed of, for having a baby, you know, pregnancy, also to deliver, you know, death and destruction to our enemies. Let's be honest. There's a huge section in my book dedicated also to that, because that is one of her aspects. And it was really funny, I have to say. It was really funny because a friend of mine said, what page again is it in your book where you talk about death and hexes? What page do the hexes start on? And I looked in my book and I said, oh my God, it's page 187. So for those, so that was a good joke by Santa Muerte. She has such a great sense of humor. So there's this whole practical thing that, you know, there's loads of love spells in my books. I mean, as you know, there's prayers and spells in my book for everything, for justice, court cases. But we can also turn to Santa Muerte on a more philosophical level. And that's why, in a way, my book is called Secrets of Santa Muerte. It's not just that I hope that my book will impart to the reader essential information, but that we can turn to Santa Muerte for secrets, right? Yeah. To discover the secrets of life and death. And people call her a death saint, but I call her a life death saint, because she allows us to recognize our existential impermanence, that we are all living and dying from moment to moment. You know, that in every single moment that we are on this planet, we are both alive and we are both going towards death. And that's okay. That is natural. And so are our loved ones. And obviously, you know, that doesn't mean that Santa Muerte devotees have some kind of death wish for themselves or for their beloved. But we recognize that when death comes, even though it is sad, and we should be grateful for every moment of life, that it's also part of that inevitable process.
Yes. Yeah, we here in the West have a ridiculously negative view of death. It's never made sense to me. Now, you know, like I just said, I lost my father when I was 12, and then my best friend when I was 15. I'm a Scorpio rising, and you know, if astrology is something that speaks to you, you know that Scorpio is surrounded by death. Scorpio is death in the tarot. But the relationship we have with death is so peculiar, because it's the one thing that's absolutely going to happen to everybody. And we act like it's this evil thing that we're trying to ward off and try to run away from at all times, when it's without death, you wouldn't have life. You know, and I want to say this in no kind of morbid, suicidal way. Like, I love life and I want to be here for a very long time, but I'm excited about death too, because I know that there is more beyond this life, and I know that it'll be an adventure. And I think that particular view of death is much healthier. Just for your own sanity, right?
Absolutely. And I get where you're coming from. Neither am I suicidal or looking to die at any moment, certainly not. But Do you know what I feel? I'm like, gosh, when I die, I'll finally be able to chill. Because, you know, I'll finally be able to chill because, you know, I've had some very deep conversations with devotees and leaders in Mexico about death. I was talking to Soraya Hernandez, a good friend of mine, a bruja of Santa Muerte, who has a temple, which everyone's welcome to visit in Tula de Hidalgo, just outside of Mexico City. And she was saying to me, and we absolutely agreed, it's not death that's frightening. It's not death that's difficult. That's actually quite easy. It's life, you know, that is frightening, that is difficult, that throws all these obstacles at us. Having said that, we are constantly living and dying through life in the sense that we're constantly being reborn and having to rise up from the ashes. And I find that many devotees of Santa Muerte come to her after extremely difficult experiences or when they're going through extremely difficult experiences and hit rock bottom. You know, whether it's my good friend Yuri Mendez, who has a beautiful shrine in Cancun. And again, if you're ever in Cancun, look her up on Facebook, Yuri Santa Muerte Mendez. Amazing. And to your listeners too, amazing, beautiful chapel with a garden outside as well. You know, and she became a devotee of Santa Muerte because she was crossing the border illegally to get to the US with a coyote, right? With a runner. Who helps people get across. And she just couldn't keep up. It was hot. She was in the desert, the Sonora desert. She just couldn't keep up with the pace. And she got abandoned in the middle of the desert. Can you imagine? In the middle of the desert alone.
Wow.
With like no food, no water, nothing. And she really thought she was going to die. And she was not a devotee of Santa Muerte. And she was just wandering aimlessly. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, she came across a prayer card of Santa Muerte just on the ground. And so she prayed. She prayed that prayer, got down on her knees and began earnest prayer to Santa Muerte. And then she walked on and a few meters after, a few feet after, she found a bottle of water and some food.
Oh, my God. You know, when you tell me the story, I could feel it in my chest.
And so I've experienced it was a miracle, right? It's a miracle.
Absolutely, yes.
And miraculously, she found her way to the States with no guidance and got through and, you know, lived there for a while and until, you know, she had problems with racism and eventually returned. It's a long story, eventually. And I'm written about her in my more academic work, but she returned to Mexico eventually. But she got a tattoo of Santa Muerte on her leg because she was like, death walks with me wherever I go. And I'm aware, you know, that death can befall me at any moment. And I will carry death with me until I'm actually in her bony embrace, you know, in her skeletal embrace in my coffin. And she just became existentially aware. And I think a lot of devotees go through different things. You know, and even talking about people in the West, perhaps, you know, getting extremely sick, having a loved one get extremely sick, perhaps losing your job, going through a divorce, a difficult breakup. You know, we go through so much hardship in our lives. And this is not generally recognized, right? I mean, we do have psychologists and people to help us, but I think the Santa Muerte gives us dignity, gives us strength to pick things up when we feel destroyed as a person, when we don't know who we are anymore, you know, no matter what the situation is, no matter, you know, I've also met people who have been close to suicide. I mean, a beautiful devotee I spoke to told me that she was harassed by someone in her family sexually. And that after that, she didn't want to live anymore. She just felt disgusting. She didn't want to eat. She didn't want to bathe. You know, she just had a total distaste for life. And so finding Santa Muerte just gave her that strength to say, no, I'm not going to take my own life. Death will come to me when it's the right time. And death gave her, Santa Muerte gave her that strength, that resilience, restored her dignity to carry on. So I think that she's in keeping with Mesoamerican indigenous understandings of the non-duality of life and death. Death allows us to be reborn.
Oh my God, absolutely. That story is very touching. But I just want to say, so what I'm thinking about as you're talking is that when people have been through tremendous hardship, that knowledge, that fear of death goes from being that fear of that unknown thing that I'm pretending won't happen to me to being incredibly comforting. You know, and I'm not sure where that transition happens. I'm not sure where it happened for me exactly, right? Because you could think, as I've said, you know, I lost my father, lost my best friend. And then in 2004, I was living and working in New Orleans when Hurricane Katrina hit, and I lost a few people there too. And it's just something that's been in my life. But so you would think, oh, you know, I've been around so much death, it's something I should be so afraid of, but it's not at all. It's something I find a lot of comfort in. It's something that I find a tremendous amount of beauty in, and to understand that death is always rebirth. And, you know, and that's the lesson of the death card, right? And Santa Muerte in the tarot. It's so important.
And that's why as Santa Muerte devotees, we're not afraid of this death card. And it's actually a positive sign of rebirth. And, you know, and that's because death is the universal, she's our universal mother. The timeless mother of us all, that we have all been returning to across the ages, whether, you know, it's our parents, our grandparents, our ancestors for eons, and all, you know, the animals and everything around us has constantly been returning to death. Death owns, I mean, that's why she carries the globe, because she owns everything. She owns everyone. Everything is hers, and everything ultimately returns to her. And is reborn with her, because, you know, as our bones, our flesh decay, rot, you know, the trees, the vegetation around us decay, rot, you know, they transmute into other things. And I think that that's also the message of Santa Muerte. She allows us to transmute things into other things. And so pain and suffering of, you know, a difficult situation can allow us to be reborn from the ashes of that. And we can be reborn stronger with new goals, with new projects, with new ideals. And of course, meeting death as well, you know, especially if you literally nearly die, or even if you feel like you've died inside, it can be a very humbling experience. You know, it can be about death of the ego in a sense, that, because if you think about death, it's such a profound moment. The soul, you know, leaves the body. And all that is left is, you know, rotting flesh, again, decaying flesh, and the soul leaves the body. And there's an understanding that, you know, that the body is just but a vessel. So all we really are is a soul. So for me, you know, personally, as a devotee, I find that it's very important to bring beauty, goodness, help others in this world, you know, charity, and helping the people and honoring the people that I work with. You know, there is not everyone's going to turn to Santa Muerte in the same way. And of course, there are always people who are going to be toxic, trolling the internet for fun and things like that. And honestly, Santa Muerte is not going to judge you no matter what you do, because she is amoral, and we can talk about that more soon. But for me, that is not my calling. And I think that I've been so humbled by death and by the people that I have met who work with death, that that's not the imprint that I want to leave on this world.
You know, and that reminds me, I wanted to say that when we were corresponding the first time via email, and I didn't have in my mind who you were, because you're using a pseudonym, and, you know, you were kind of mysterious. So when I read your book, I thought I was speaking to a woman born and raised in Mexico, who just happened to speak perfect English or had a fantastic translator, because there was nothing inauthentic. Nothing about your book wasn't heartfelt, authentic, and really expressed every bit of beauty that Santa Muerte is.
Thank you. That touches me deeply. And more, I think it honors the people that I've worked with that have taught me so wonderfully. And, you know, truly all this work is ultimately dedicated to them. And, you know, we've been through so much together. In fact, you know, that's how I got into Santa Muerte. I nearly died on an operating table. I bled out. I was hemorrhaging. And I had just moved to a new country. I was absolutely alone. And it was very humbling for me. You know, I realized for all my doctorate accomplishments that, you know, who was I really, you know, that I was just a soul, you know, that I was really, that my body was just a physical vessel, and that all these accomplishments didn't really mean anything in the greater scheme of things. And then when I went to Mexico, and I'd already been, but I returned, I told this sabia, this lady, about everything that had happened to me. And that was our true moment of connection, because she had almost nearly died as well. She had been very sick for about 12 years. And one night she was lying in bed thinking that it was her time, that death was going to come. And she saw an owl, and the owl carried a carriage. It had a harness on it, the owl. And in that carriage was Santa Muerte. And she said, oh, death has come. You know, it's my time. And this wasn't a dream. You know, this is real. Mm-hmm. She said, death has come. This is my time. But death came to her, but not as expected, because death said to her, you can live again. I will give you a miracle, but start a chchapel to me or honor me, honor my name. And the next day she awoke refreshed, got out of bed with no aches and pains, and she was healed by death. You know, death can be a healer for us. And then she started this small, well, her son bought her a statue. And so she put it outside her house. She didn't really know what she was doing at that time. And people started coming and giving offerings. You know, people are always drawn to Santa Muerte. And the offerings were starting to grow. And then one day there was a hurricane. Unfortunately, in that region, there are a lot of hurricanes. And I can speak more to that later. But there was a hurricane. And everything was devastated, except for Santa Muerte. The statue stood upright and unhurt. And what's more is that people were suffering so much, they came to the statue and they asked for miracles, and she gave them these miracles. And so they decided to build her first official sort of altar space, chapel space. And it started as a small chapel, and over the years it has expanded and expanded. So this is the story of this lady who is indigenous. And, you know, this is the lady that has been working since age 8, was thrown out of her home because her father was a curandero, a shaman. But he married this, her mother died, and then he married this new lady who didn't want his children, his old children, his children from a previous marriage around. So she went off to the city and worked for years. And then, you know, eventually she became the owner of this chapel, which is now very renowned, and people come from miles around to see her. The people even dream of her chapel and come to her. So anyway, when I told her that I had nearly died and that I had been through all of this, she took me under her wing. And she started taking me to curanderos, shamans that worked with death. And thus begun my journey. And initially I just went to these curanderos for healing, to help me, you know, learning the ways of Santa Muerte, prayers, etc. But eventually her daughter, who is also a devotee of death, moved back. And then they decided to submit me to some tests, because I've always had precognitive dreams. I've read tarot for a long time, since I was about 14. And my aunt gave me a tarot set, which was just supposed to be for kids, she thought, to play around with. But I was like, whoa, yes.
Yeah.
And I got really into it. And it had runes as well and all these things. Mm-hmm. And then this neighbor of a friend of mine, he gave me my second tarot deck, because he's like, you've got, and then I was about 17, 18, he said, I see something in you. I'm going to give you this deck. So anyway, for years, I kind of hadn't been touching that. I've been at Oxford University. They were trying to get rid of all my spiritual side and make me all academic. And, you know, all that is nonsense. And then when I went back to Mexico, all the spirituality just kind of hit me, and it had kind of never gone from me. And so this sabia and her daughter made me do some tests. They're like, okay, you're going to read tarot for us. Let's see how good you are. And so I started reading for them. And you know how it is when you're channeling for people, and people that you feel a deep, deep connection to. And I believe I have past life connections with these people. I just told them their whole life. Mm-hmm. And they were like, okay, you're ready. We're going to apprentice you. Now starts the serious learning. buckle in, put on your seatbelt, because it's going to be intense. And it was. So I got very deeply immersed in Santa Muerte devotion. And I'm so, so blessed to have met these women and these people. And they put me in touch with all their network of shamans and curanderos, and thus begun the learning.
That's incredible. You know, I want to say, I love science a lot. I really, really do. But that view of spirituality being woo-woo is horse shit. And people who can't, you know, grasp that, who don't understand the psychological aspect of it, can't grasp the benefits to your mental health, the philosophical aspects of it, and just like, oh, that's for kids or such stuff, they're missing out on such a tremendous part of life, and they are mistaking their own subjective reality for objective reality. And it's a huge mistake, because objective reality is physics and not much else beyond that. The rest of your entire life and everything is your subjective reality. And they don't seem to grasp that. And again, I'm not trying to insult the institution where you got your doctorate or anything like that. There's just this worldview amongst, you know, academically minded people or the scientific community that, oh, all that stuff, that's just nonsense. Man, are they missing out?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's where we get misunderstanding of who Santa Muerte is. Mm-hmm. Because people try to come in with scientific rhetorics which just simply do not cut it. I mean, you can't understand her through the scientific lens. And what I love about Santa Muerte is she opens us up to the psychic realms, the astral realms.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you try to understand that through an academic lens, you're just never going to be able to. And you're always going to come in with Eurocentric assumptions that death is either somehow macabre, which is what we see, right, in the press all the time, you know, that she's some macabre narco-satanic figure, or that devotees of Santa Muerte are desperately trying to avoid death. I see this a lot in the academic literature on Santa Muerte. You know, if you Google, you know, and most of this is just because it's, I mean, and I respect academia, and there is some good to be found in those books and in that literature.
Yeah, of course.
But there are just some gross misconceptions. And that ultimately also comes from Christian theology, where, you know, death is about finality, something we don't want, something to be avoided. So therefore, people presume that devotees of Santa Muerte are constantly praying to her to avoid death. And now I would be lying if I said, you know, that people don't. Of course, people want to avoid death, and violent death in particular. You know, especially people, you know, that I've met that work in the sort of underworld, whether it's, you know, in narco trafficking, criminal activities, you know, gangsters, etc. Of course, they pray to her for safety. Prisoners I've met who, you know, ask her to keep them safe from death in jail. You know, people have written to me about this. Of course, she does that as well. But there's also another side to her where, as we discussed, if death comes to you, it's not to be feared, because she is our universal mother, and her bony embrace is comforting.
Yeah.
And in a world especially of so much fake news, of, you know, people finding their news and believing stuff on Reddit and social media and all this nonsense, right, which we really cannot, we cannot expect that to be fact, yet people somehow, you know, are often duped by these things. But I think that there's a large, intelligent portion of the population who are aware, you know, that there is so much fake news, that there's all these narratives being spun all the time, whether it's on television, social media, everywhere. And we can't trust anything, right? We can't trust anyone. And especially in Mexico, this is particularly true. Because politics is so corrupt there, right? I mean, I'm not saying it isn't elsewhere, but it's particularly corrupt there. And there's this whole game that, you know, police versus cartel, when often the police and the cartel are, you know, actually working together.
Yeah, one and the same.
And, you know, nobody can know what is true, right? It's very difficult. And I've seen that because my people from Mexico will tell me, oh, someone got shot this week. You know, sadly, I'll be told that. And I'll look in the news and I'll try to find out something about it. And there'll be nothing there. Or if there is, it really doesn't give the crux of the matter on what really, really happened. So to summarize, we're just surrounded by all these narratives, all these fake news, but there is one truth. There is one person that we can rely on, and that is death, Santa Muerte, because she is always there. She is the truth of all our lives. No matter what, we are all headed to her.
Yeah, that's that, and that is quite profound. And, you know, I love that in every word you speak, I can sense, I can hear the devotion to Santa Muerte in your life, and how this has clearly had this tremendous impact on you. You know, I get, so I'm not a person, I don't experience much jealousy. Okay, I'll tell you that. It's very difficult to evoke a negative emotion from me, and I'm quite proud of that. But I do sometimes experience a little bit of jealousy to people who are deeply devoted to one spiritual practice, because I'm all over the place. I'm a chaos magician. I'm going to research one pantheon and get really involved with it, and one day I'm gonna wake up and change my mind. You know, which is one of the reasons I've actually avoided working with Santa Muerte, is I don't want to disrespect her like that. Not that I want to disrespect any of the pantheons or gods that I work with, but as a chaos magician, I'm kind of all over the place.
Well, I respect that, and I respect, you know, that everybody has to work in their own way, and that's why in my book it created some controversy that I had a chapter on how to break up with Santa Muerte, like a ritual to no longer work with her. And people were like, well, you know, death is always with you. You can never divorce yourself from death. Yeah, no brainer. But on the other hand, because I have heard stories about people, especially in Mexico, who, you know, just threw their Santa Muerte statues in a cupboard and forgot about them and then had to pay the price.
Right.
I think that if you know, working with Santa Muerte is not for everyone, and it's not for the faint-hearted, because much as she can be very practical and you can work with her, you know, in whatever way you want. And there are some people who work with her in a sort of light way. If you get really deep with her, you know, you might get intense life death lessons. But that's not for everyone, and not everyone can bond with her. I've had people write to me and say, what am I doing wrong? I can't seem to elicit, you know, a response from her. I can't seem to build a relationship with her, and I can't tell them what they're doing wrong. You know, I can try and counsel them, but yeah, I don't see what their practice is like. And so for those people, you know, this is a ritual that I offer so that, you know, you can respectfully walk away from that without feeling that there may be repercussions. You know, the other big thing that created controversy was the blood pact, which I write about in my book. And people were like, oh, you shouldn't be. One, there was a very neo-colonial sort of reaction where people said, this is wrong. This is kind of blasphemous. No one should be giving their blood to Santa Muerte, which I thought was hilarious.
Ridiculous.
Because if you have any knowledge of Mexico and Santa Muerte's indigenous origins, because she is a mestiza character, she has partly Catholic origins, but also indigenous origins, then you will know that all death deities in Mexico were offered blood, because blood is the elixir of life.
Yes.
And indeed, this was an honorable thing, whether it was nobles piercing body parts with stingray tails, obsidian blades, doing what's called bloodletting as offerings or to get visions from the gods, or whether it was, you know, there's this super racist depiction of the Aztec, which, by the way, they never actually call themselves the Aztec. They call themselves the Mexica. Aztec is a kind of European imposition. Yep. So the Mexica people, you know, they're famous for, you know, Aztec blood sacrifice, right? And we see it in all the films. They try to make all these gory scenes around it. But what we need to know about that is that, yes, humans were sacrificed to them. Yes, they ripped out people's hearts, beating hearts, because, you know, this was part of, again, death for life, right? Asking for fertility, asking for positive energy to be imbued into that city state. But by the way, those people that they sacrificed were warriors caught during war you know, held captive and then sacrificed. And it was kind of an honor to die that way, you know. And if we should judge ourselves, because nowadays, you know, armies go around blasting people to pieces with guns, you know, AK-47s, Heckler and Koch, whatever, you know, bombs, grenades,
yeah,
army tanks, right?
Where's the modern world has no right or place calling the ancient world savage.
Exactly.
We are far more savage. We're just a little more disingenuous about it.
Exactly. And it's just so hypocritical. So, you know, blood offerings and blood sacrifice are an important part of the non-dualistic traditions of death deities in Mexico. So anybody judging that, you know, it inherently is showing their misunderstanding of, totally, of ancient traditions and sort of trying to whitewash them. And the other really important thing that I love about Santa Muerte is that people also do tattoos, right? They do what they call ofrenda de piel, skin offering, right?
Yeah.
As I spoke about, Yuri Mendez put that picture, that image of Santa Muerte on her leg to show that death walks with her, right? And I've met so many devotees that do these skin offerings that have beautiful tattoos of Santa Muerte. And this could be to ask for a miracle, or it could be to thank her. I mean, and people are even doing this in jail in Mexico. I know people, sadly, I have people that have gone to jail in Mexico, and we can talk about that later. And, you know, who've been involved in criminal activities, but through desperation. You know, in the past, before I came to Santa Muerte, I would have judged them. I'd be like, oh my God, you're a prisoner. But now I've been humbled and I understand that I have white privilege and I've never had to go and commit a crime so that I can get my next meal, right?
Yeah.
So I am fortunate to not have to risk my life. And jail is really, really dangerous everywhere, whether it's, you know, especially in places like California in the US, where there are lots of gangs and devotees of Santa Muerte, by the way, as I know, because they have reached out to me. But in Mexico, it's particularly bad, right? Because there's no human rights. There's a lot of violence. So people do tattoos in jail and they're not supposed to. So what they do is that they get paper and then they burn it to get carbon. And then they'll get like Vaseline or some other kind of ointment that they can get their hands on. And then they will get like, they're allowed to have a razor. So they might attach to a razor. They use that as a kind of anchor. They will get, you know, these spiral books. They're allowed to have spiral books. So they'll get a spiral book. They'll take off a little bit of the metal and then they'll shave it down. Then they'll attach it to the razor. And then someone, you know, who's gifted will dip it into that ink that they've made and do a tattoo. So ofrenda de piel is really important, flesh offering. And people are even doing it in situations where it's really difficult to do that. Yeah. And I've written about this. I have a chapter coming up in my academic kind of writing on tattoos to Santa Muerte, which details this stuff and more. But when you do a tattoo, you bleed, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And so that is part of the offering. So there's a lot of people out there like, oh, no, you shouldn't offer blood. But then they've got like a tattoo. And I'm like, wait, you know, add one and one together. So, yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna rant about this for a moment. I also get it. Take this opportunity to give a big shout out to my friend Lauren, who makes these. This is a ritual bloodletting kit that you can get from Sui Generis Magica. It comes with a scalpel and a couple hypodermic needles and, you know, some cleanup wipes, alcoholic wipes and such. It's a really great little kit. I love it. But listen, if you're a practitioner of magic of any kind, I don't care what kind, and you view blood sacrifice or blood offerings or just using blood in magic period as some kind of evil satanic blah 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 blah, you're missing out on one of the most powerful aspects of performing magic period, and you're inserting an Abrahamic worldview into your magic that's and you're also getting it wrong, because the blood of Christ was clearly sacred, right? So you're just, all you're doing is imposing this whitewashed Christian but not actually Christian worldview on your magic, and nothing is gonna like dumb it down faster than that. I put blood on almost all of my spells because I'm just, from a scientific point of view, okay, the chemicals that are in your brain your state of mind is flowing through your blood at any given moment. And if you know how to, if you understand magic and you understand that you need to be in an altered state of consciousness, that you need to be deeply in the moment that you're doing magic, then when you put your blood on your spell, you're imprinting your exact energetic state of mind, time and space, all in that just one little drop. And it's very powerful. It's not evil. Get over it. Like, get over it. Oh my gosh.
I love your rant. I felt like clapping. I'm like, woohoo. Yeah. I don't even need to say anything now. You know, you summarized it beautifully. And, you know, body fluids in general are sacred and important in magic. And this, again, you know, this whitewashing, it's kind of a colonial hang up because, by the way, in pre-Hispanic Mexico, and I've done the research, I'm an anthropologist, I've got all these geeky books around me, like this one right here, about post-classic Central Mexico and you know, the death deities there. I have done a fair amount of reading, and there's also a great writer, I think his name is Pete, I think it's Sejal or Segal, as in Steven Seagal, right? He has written on the Maya and other pre-Hispanic people who used semen, menstrual blood, and other body fluids to empower their magic. And by the way, people are still doing this now today in Mexico and with Santa Muerte. And it's not disrespectful. I mean, the first time I heard about this, I was a little shocked. I was at a chapel. I mean, I knew about blood. I had been told about blood. And I'd heard about menstrual blood as well, you know, and it's common in Mexico, if you want to, ladies, do a love spell on your man, put a little menstrual blood in his food or his coffee. And that is said to, you know, make him yours, right?
So we could do a whole, like, maybe members only or paywall episode on that topic, because I have a lot to say about it.
Okay, perfect. Let's do it. Yeah. Let's do it. And so, I was at this chapel one day, and this lady came along, you know, and I'm constantly, that's why I love, you know, I hang out all day, every day at these chapels, because, and, you know, not asking questions, oh, how do you do this? How do you do that? It's not how you learn. You just watch, you observe, you do what is called in anthropology, participant observation. So you're not just observing, you're participating actively, and you get beyond asking people questions, and you just see what unfolds. So anyway, so this lady comes to the chapel and she asks the bruja, the witch, she said, yeah, this guy, I really like this guy, this man, but he's being really difficult. And I kind of want to dominate him. I kind of want him to be under my spell. I kind of want to control him. I'm sick and tired of him telling me what to do. So the bruja says to her, okay, let me get you a candle. So she brings this candle up. And I think I have it in my book, by the way. I think I write about this, which is called Domino a mi Hombre, or something like that. It's called, like, I dominate my man. And this is called a dominio, right? It's like to dominate. So she brings out this candle, but she also says, here's a cup. Here's a plastic cup. Go and pee in it. And then put the, you know, light the candle, say the prayer on the candle, and then pee in this. And as you pee, think about him. Because pee is a really, urine is really important in spells of domination. Because if we think about it and you bring it back to animals, and we are animals, right?
That's right.
Animals mark their territory, in particular felines, right? Mm-hmm. But also other animals. With urine. So you're marking your territory. So by using urine, you can mark someone as your territory. So body fluids are really important. You know, semen can be used. Like, you know, we could, like, as you said, tears can be used as well. Yeah. Everything from the body can be sacred and used to empower magic.
Yeah, two things you really need to get over as a magician, if you're serious about magic and you're serious about witchcraft and this is a life that you're living, you have to get over feeling silly about it, and you can't be a prude. You just can't, you know, you have to look at reality for what it is. And as you were saying, look at the body as the animal that it is, and look at the world for what it is, and not view it through this particular filter that most people in the modern world do view life from, that we are somehow separate of nature and from reality, yeah, and even from each other, I don't fart, that kind of thing, you know.
All that. No, I don't. I never have.
You know, not looks at, listen, there's no use for farts.
I mean, I'm sure there could be, and I'm sure there is, and I'm sure there's people using this, you know, I can imagine uses already. Probably negative ones, right? But
yeah, you know, yeah, I mean, totally.
Let's face it, fecal matter, I don't want to bring this down to a crass level, but that is used, you know, people will use that, and people in, yeah, Mexico will use like dog poop.
Yeah. You, well, I mean, by if the way, make a hex jar, you want to put the nastiest stuff, yeah, you can in there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So
I'm not here advocating the people run around hexing each other, but there are legitimate, and this is something I love that you touched on in your book, there are real reasons to use baneful magic. You can't be afraid of it, and you have to understand it. Or again, if you know, I love the old kind of saying that if you can't hex, you can't heal. It's very true. You need to understand the entire spectrum. Again, I'm not advocating that people run around hexing each other on TikTok, okay? That's not what I'm talking about. But don't try to hex the fucking moon. Oh my God. But understanding the nature of baneful magic and its role in the great, see, when I want to say the magical world, but something you understand as a magician and as a witch is that the entire world is made out of magic. There's nothing that isn't part of that magical world, and that everybody all day, every day are doing magic. It's just, are you doing it intentionally or unintentionally? That's the only difference. Everybody does.
And sometimes they do. And sometimes also baneful magic, you know, and hexing, you know, as you said, is perfectly legit. I mean, I don't recommend, and I say that in my book, that you just do only dark magic because, you know, you're going to get out of whack, out of sync.
Totally.
Yeah. And you're going to have to pay, there's going to be some kind of payoff for that. So, you know, it's good to balance light and dark. I mean, I'm mostly a white witch, as they would call it. Yeah, mm-hmm. Bit of a stupid term if you ask me. Mm-hmm. But I know that there is a reason for, you know, baneful magic. And I've helped a friend, for example, in Mexico, whose brother was beating her, you know, just a lot of domestic violence done towards her, and we worked together to sort of get rid of him and get rid of that influence over her and over her children, because it was just endangering. And that's why in my book I do give, you know, plenty of there's spells, prayers for everything, but the hexes are there, and there are people who will use them for ill, and you know, and I have some really, you know, quite dark stuff in there. But also I've seen how people will repurpose what could be at first blush prima facie seen as, you know, ineluctably inherently evil. I've seen people transmute that into something positive. For example, there's the so-called Sicario's prayer, which starts with, if they have eyes, let them not see me. If they have hands, I think it's, let them not touch me. If they have feet, let them not reach me. Let my death not be violent. And it continues. So that's in my book. And obviously the Sicario prayer is initially intended for Sicarios who were trying to, you know, let's call a spade, murder someone and do it, rush in, rush out, unseen by authorities or enemies. But I have seen women in Mexico repurpose that to prevent femicide, you know, to prevent violence, sexual harassment when they have to go to places that they know are inherently dangerous. Because, you know, unlike me, where I live in the Western world most of the time, and I have the good fortune to have a car, an old secondhand car, albeit, but I still have a car, right? I have a vehicle. And though I do mostly take public transport for my work, you know, I have that vehicle to get into if I have to go through a dangerous neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Most women in Mexico, you know, and I've been taught intense gratitude through working with Santa Muerte. Most of my friends in Mexico do not have a car. cannot even drive. The lucky ones have a scooter or a moped. So when they have to take a journey, they're always on public transport. And, you know, and those journeys can be really dangerous. You may have to go on a bus through a mountain road where there are known pandillas, like gangs and cartels that operate, and where, you know, you may be, they may come onto the bus with guns. And, you know, I just had a friend the other day, even in a car. I was worried. I didn't hear from them for ages. And then all of a sudden they sent me a message and they said, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. We were driving our car and we got stopped by these armed guys. And they just took our phones, our wallets, like the car, everything. And I'm not saying that Mexico is inherently dangerous. It's not. And if you go to the touristic areas, as I said, it's fine. I don't want to give Mexico a bad reputation because it's such a wonderful country.
No, but it's just the world. You know, every time when we're talking about the dangers of Mexico, I'm always thinking about, well, I lived in San Francisco twice.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't want to be out at night in San Francisco walking around alone either.
Yeah.
It's not safe. The public transportation is not safe. Your chances of getting mugged are high. Your chances of walking past a drug deal are high. You know, it's not safe. And this is true of parts of the entire world, you know, and in Mexico, the danger level is a little high. You know, it's just a fact.
Well, it depends where you go. Corrupt. You know, if you go to Cancun, Puerto Vallarta, Cabo San Lucas, all these tourist places. I mean, even a friend of mine I was talking to them this morning who lives in Acapulco. And he said to me, just come and visit me sometime in Acapulco. He's moved recently to Acapulco. And I said, oh, but I've heard so many bad things about Acapulco. And he was cute. And he said to me, pero gatita, because that's what he calls me. That's my kind of gatita is my kind of Mexican name. He's like, eres un pan de Dios. You know, you're an angel. You've got nothing to worry about. You know, if you were walking around. And I was like, sí, soy un pan de Dios. Yes, I'm an angel. I'll take that. you were walking around trying to get into trouble, you know, like doing dirty deals, whatever it was, then yes, you would have something to fear in Acapulco. But if you're just chilling on the beach, you're minding your own business, then you're going to be okay. And you know, that's what I've learned about Mexico, is there's just so much racism towards Mexican people, especially Mexican men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who were all painted out to be narco traffickers, rapists. You know, Trump has certainly not helped with that. We have shows like Breaking Bad. And, you know, all of this horrible, these horrible depictions of Santa Muerte that depict her as inherently evil, malevolent, macabre. I think that that's just an extension of that racism towards Mexican people or part of it. And honestly, you know, I've spent a lot of time in Mexico. I went to a huge party for Dia de Muertos, Day of the Dead, where a lot of chapels actually celebrate Santa Muerte's death day, birthday on Day of the Dead. They don't all do that. Like Yuri Mendez in Cancun celebrates Santa Muerte's birthday in August. This is in keeping with the Mexica, the Aztec idea that death was celebrated in August because the Lord and Lady of the Underworld, Mictlantecuhtli and Mictlantecacihuatl, were venerated, celebrated then. But anyway, I was at this Day of the Dead celebration, Dia de Muertos, in Oaxaca at this chapel, and it was really beautiful, really, really gorgeous. You know, flowers everywhere, marigolds, cempasúchil, bands playing honoring Santa Muerte. I mean, they throw a huge party, and I've seen again racist depictions of that, people being like, oh, these people have nothing, surely they must be doing bad things to get all this money or wasting their money. Hey, you know, they really know how to honor the deities in Mexico, right? So I was at this party, and initially I was afraid because I was the only gringa, the only white person there. And I'm much taller than everybody else because I'm generally tall as it is in my own country. And particularly in that region, people tend to be smaller. So I was like, oh my God, I'm going to stick out like a sore thumb. some people were like, oh my God, you have to be careful. This is going to be dangerous. It wasn't. It was wonderful. And I was so protected. And I was protected by the men of the family who just kept an eye on me the whole night. And, you know, nobody was trying anything. Everybody was just there to celebrate Santa Muerte. So I just think that there are so many racist depictions and misrepresentations of Mexican people, and Mexico is somewhere inherently dangerous. And even of narco traffickers, you know, I mean, not all of them are going around with huge guns ready to shoot off any second. A lot of people are just working quietly behind the scenes and doing that because there is no upward mobility in Mexico. If right. you are born into the lower classes, right, and you are born, say, indigenous or, you know, really, you know, lower classes, which I don't even like to use this term lower classes, but we've got to understand this somehow, people who have very little income and, yeah. and have no educational opportunities and have to leave school at 15, 16 because they have to work. Yeah. They can't even afford to go to school. You know, if you're ambitious, it's very easy to want to go into that because you have no opportunities. I mean, I saw this ridiculous documentary the other day about narco traffickers, and this woman, this narrator was saying, yes, these men are drawn to narco trafficking because they want to have a nice house and a car and a nice wife. And I thought, well, hey, doesn't everybody who wants to live, you know, without running water, because I know plenty of people that have no running water, who wants to live with a dirt floor? Yeah. Who wants to live in, you know, I've met people, they live in huts like made, you know, and I'm so grateful for what I have. This work has made me so grateful. They live in just a very basic house made of a few planks of wood with a tin roof. Who wants yeah. to live like that? But I mean, there honestly, there are some people who accept that, like this Santa Muerte Sabia that I know told me, I don't need anything. All I need is mi Santa Muerte. And that mm. is enough for me. She has no television. She's never even, you know, touched a computer in her life. And she thinks Facebook, if she even kind of, I've explained to her what that is. We've kind of, the younger generations have explained to her what that is. She's like, it sounds like a waste of time, right? And I'm like, yeah. So there are people who kind of eschew that, but there are people who want to better themselves, better their lives, and give their children an opportunity as well. So I think that, you know, we have this very racist view of Mexican people. We don't understand why people might go into narco trafficking. And that's to avoid, by the way, looking at our own faults in the US, Canada, where people consume these drugs, right? Or to look at, you know, in Mexico, most people who are shot by a gun are shot by a gun that was manufactured in the US, right? Mm-hmm. And the drug war generates huge amounts of money, by the way, for all those involved, not just those selling the drugs, but those fighting the war on drugs, right? Yeah. Who sell the guns and the people who sell bulletproof vests and the people who sell the night vision goggles. I mean, this is a very complex situation.
It is. And the relationship between Mexico and the US is what fuels the drug trade, right? Because it's all coming to the US because that's where the buyers are. If the US wasn't buying the drugs, Mexico wouldn't, or not Mexico, but the cartels would not be selling the drugs.
And another thing people forget is that the territory that these drugs are passing through was actually part of Mexico originally. Right? Yeah. There was a huge war, and then this land was taken away. So it's all very, very complex. And I think that it tends to get simplified. And I think that's because, you know, we impose Eurocentric, Manichean, dualistic ideas of good versus bad.
Yeah.
Us versus them.
Us versus them.
Let's build a wall, right? Let's build a wall between them so they don't touch us. Well, hey, you know, that's not going to work. We're all, as you know, because you're a magician, we're all interconnected.
Yeah. Right? There's no separation.
There's no separation. You
know, and that racism is so deep-seated. People don't even realize when they're doing it. You know, I was very fortunate to grow up in a way where I just see people. I don't care where you're from or your skin color or any such thing. I just see people. I recognize where people are from, and I think that's cool, and I want to hear about it. And, you know, but I don't put judgments on them for it. And I remember, this is such a silly thing, but I remember being in my early 20s, and I went on a date with this girl. We went on a couple of dates. And one of the things she said to me, we were playing pool. This is in Napa, California. She said, "You've really changed my perception of Mexican men." And I said, "What? What did you think they were?" you know, and then she told me about it. I'm like, whoa, like people are just people. Like people are individuals, you know, they're not, anyways. Yeah.
They're not homogenous. They're not homogenous. And we try to, and that's why this work has been really humbling to me, is that, you know, I come from white privilege and education, and I did have difficult experiences, you know, growing up. And as a young woman, you know, women can have a tough time in this world, experiencing harassment, mm-hmm. people treating me as if I'm an idiot because of, you know, my gender. When, you know, and I was struggling with that, that was really hard, because I soon realized that actually I'm really smart, but nobody would. I mean, I'm not blowing my own horn.
You just wave your doctorate in their face now.
Yeah, but, you know, so people were constantly judging me and putting me down. And you know, I discussed this, you know, I found parallels with my best friend in Mexico, where she was like, yeah, my parents just thought she's great. She has her own shop. She's deeply devoted to Santa Muerte and does rituals by the sea, by the way, which is so beautiful. But she had the same thing. You know, she runs her own shop. She's really ambitious in what she does. And she had the same thing, where people just expected her to get married, have children. That's all you're ever going to do. But anyway, growing up with this privilege, you know, I wasn't in contact with people who grew up in rougher places, who grew up close to death on a daily basis. And so this work has been so humbling to me, to realize that I am equal with everybody else, no matter their education, no matter their background, because through my work, you know, I've met, as I said, people who have been to prison, people who are in prison right now, people who, you know, walk the line between life and death because they take drugs, hard drugs on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. I've met sicarios, I've met narcos, you know, I've met people who have terminal illnesses. I've met people, you know, who live just in extremely dangerous environments. And so that has been, and people who, like I said, cannot read nor write, and that perhaps greater society would judge, oh, you can't read nor write, you must be a stupid person. Well, no, actually, some of those people have taught me more than any book or any professor at Oxford University ever could. So it's just been hugely humbling to realize, you know, that I am equal to all these people. And that's what I love about Santa Muerte, is she teaches us before death, we are all equal. So do not go around judging people that you do not know. Right. And there are people we need to be careful of. There are people we do need to watch our backs, but they may not always be the people that we thought.
You know, speaking of the drug trade and the cartels and all this we've been discussing, what is the true relationship between Santa Muerte and the drug trade, or in drug use?
Well, if we speak to drug use, you know, Santa Muerte does not judge you for taking drugs. And, you know, she's so open to people of all vocations and lifestyles. So if you choose to take drugs, she's not going to judge you. On the other hand, I have had devotees tell me that they've made a promise to her to stop taking those drugs. Mm-hmm. And one devotee told me that, you know, he didn't keep his end of the bargain, Ricardo Verdez, talking to you, and he got scratched up by her and punished. But there are also curanderos and brujos, you know, people, shamans and witches in Mexico that use drugs to get entheogenic visions, right? To work with Santa Muerte, because Santa Muerte is all about having, you know, there's this whole very cosmic, transcendental aspect to her, where we can access other worlds through her, because death mm-hmm. is a portal, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So when we take entheogenic substances, we can access those worlds with much more facility. I mean, you can still access mm-hmm. those worlds in dreams. Mm-hmm. So you can take Valerian or Aztec dream grass. But, you know, in the part of Mexico where I go, to Oaxaca, there is a tradition there. Maria Sabina is a very famous shaman that worked there. And, you know, the Beatles and all sorts of people, Walt Disney went to her and they took magic mushrooms with her, right? Psilocybin. Mm-hmm. And that's, by the way, where Walt Disney came up with all these great ideas, like Mickey Mouse, right? He got high.
Yeah, of course.
So there is a tradition of taking magic mushrooms. And so the local curanderos work with magic mushrooms in some places to induce visions. There's also something called Sage of the Diviner, also called Scar Maria Pastora. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Salvia.
Yeah, salvia. Yes. Oh, yeah. So some work with that's going to give you hallucinations. Mm-hmm. And then there's a really, really interesting herb, which I've actually not taken. Not that I've taken all these other drugs, but I'm just saying this one really fascinates me. It's called Yerba de los Espíritus. And I think I just wrote down the scientific name, Haemia salicifolia. And that is actually an auditory hallucinogen. So what is
that
going
would
to
be
do?
Terrifying.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. I don't know. I'm excited to try it. So everything will look normal, but you're going to hear stuff. So then you can hear messages from Santa Muerte. And your sound is really important with Santa Muerte devotion. I even have some cool instruments here that Yuri Santa Muerte Mendez gave to me. Go and visit her shrine if you're in Cancun. Do give an offering to the chapel. Even if you're not a devotee, you have to give an offering to the chapel and a donation. So she gave me this Jaguar flute, which I just love. And if you breathe into it,
that is such a trippy sound, though.
And I've also got an owl flute, and I know lots of devotees that work with music. Yeah, so sound is really important. And lots of devotees, I mean, I don't mention this a lot in the book, but you can work with sound and sound healing. That is an important part. And you know, some devotees will play pre-Hispanic music or do drumming. You know, I've got devotees, a beautiful devotee showed me that she had bought a drum and then painted Santa Muerte on it.
And drumming is almost universal in terms of inducing psychedelic experiences or in meditation.
Trance.
It's so important. Yes. I don't know what you would say the word is. I'm not exactly a hermeticist, but the hermetic principles are very important to me in the way that I teach magic. And the principle of rhythm is so important in so many ways. And that rhythmic trance is so important to inducing magical consciousness. I mean, it's one of the most profound ways.
Absolutely. I don't know if you know the work of Michael Harner, who's an anthropologist who wrote about the sound of rushing water. Mm-hmm. And he encourages people to go into, I mean, he's not a Santa Muerte devotee, but he was working with Amazonian shamans. And an important part, I mean, I'm just vibing on what you said, and I love it, because an important part of the trance altered state of consciousness journey is drumming, because it gets you into that hypnotic state and induces altered. And I mean, you know, there's lots of different ways of inducing altered states of perception. So there's drugs, drumming, dancing. Yeah, dancing, notice they all begin with D. Dreaming.
Yeah. They do.
Deprivation, right? Sensory deprivation. So we can blindfold ourselves or, you know, so another form of deprivation would be fasting, right? Mm-hmm. Purposely not, you know, and native people in the Americas have often gone on vision quests, right? Into the forest with no food, basic things to bring on vision. So in Santa Muerte, that can be an important part. And because it's an animistic faith, you know, you can work with animal spirits like the jaguar. Mm-hmm. And I speak about the coyote, you know, the coyote. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know how people pronounce it differently in the States and in Canada, like coyote. I don't know how they.
Yeah, it depends on what part of the, where you're from. But
So people work with the coyote oil, as I describe in the book, because the coyote, you know, is a trickster animal, right? And this goes back to the Mexica and other indigenous deities who were trickster figures. So if you want to have cunning in your spell, say, whether it's to evade authorities or to trick someone into doing something for you, or you want to fool them, then that's very useful. You might also use hummingbird oil for elevated spiritual vibration. The owl, of course, Santa Muerte's companion animal, can also be turned to. And all these things are animistic. And I don't mean that in the old anthropology Tylorian sense that, oh, you know, people are stupid and they believe everything has a spirit, even though, you know, it's just...
And so now the same people are talking about panpsychism. You can't just rebrand animism, call it something different and act like you invented it. You know, panpsychism is gaining a lot of traction in the scientific realm over there. And it's hilarious to me because so much of our modern science, and this is what I teach in my course, by the way, so much of our modern science, string theory, panpsychism, the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, guess what? You're all just coming back to magic. It's all you're doing.
Yeah, and ideas that the ancients knew since, you know, yeah, antediluvian times. These are atavistic, antediluvian, primordial ideas that have been with us since time immemorial, but we paint the ancients as savages, yeah, and ourselves as so evolved that we're discovering all this stuff, which we're not. You know, and animism was initially a dirty word in anthropology, or people who believe that inanimate things or animals have spirits. But now people are reclaiming it and recognizing, you know, indigenous epistemology and giving it value, at least in anthropology, which is great. I don't know that they've done this in other disciplines, but anthropology has become more open since what we call the ontological turn, since we started to examine our epistemological faults and how we can learn from others. So in Santa Muerte, you know, we can recognize that even a stone, you know, has a spirit, and talk to that stone. Or if we're working with herbs, you know, basil, rue are very important within, to do baños, to do cleanses within Santa Muerte. We can talk to those herbs. We can thank them. You know, people will use aloe vera in other mm-hmm. things. So, and the same with animals, right? Recognize the power of that animal. Recognize if you're working with Santa Muerte, the power. I love to turn to the owl of Santa Muerte and I ask her to be my messenger and to bring me the messages that I need from Santa Muerte, from the astral realms, from my ancestors. So yeah, such a beautiful faith with so many amazing traditions, which are time old. And as I said, which are kind of universal as well, if we yeah. turn back to our ancient ancestry.
Yeah. And our, you know, if you go all the way back and you start to notice that all of these so-called primitive people understood that consciousness was fundamental to time, space, and matter. They got that long before we're just getting it now, right? And we're the ones who are epistemologically naive. We're the ones who view the world as a collection of separate objects, when it's most certainly not, and quantum physics is demonstrating that everything is connected, that objective reality is something we have almost no contact with whatsoever.
There is no objective reality. Everything is subjective. You know, we're all exactly. living in our own sort of Weltanschauung, our own worldview. So yes. within our own epistemological upbringing, baggage, experiences, mm-hmm. but I think through death that we can conjoin. And, yeah. and I've had experiences, you know, I know that a lot of devotees are solo practitioners, unfortunately, in the US, you know, in the UK, in Canada, in the West, because we don't have, at least, you know, when I'm here, I don't have the opportunity generally to work with other devotees. I am part of a coven, so I've introduced them to Santa Muerte and, you know, mm-hmm. we've bonded through that. But when I've been in Mexico, if you go to a chapel, you can go to a rosary or you can go to a ritual, a limpia, you know, where other people may be there working with you. And I've had the most transcendental, profound experiences, out of body experiences and going into other people's bodies when we've been working with death, because that is one thing that conjoins us all and that yeah. can break down all those boundaries and all those epistemological and very real walls that people like Trump and others, you know, try to build between us and them, between the US and Mexico. But I think that in death ritual, because that is a commonality between us, all those walls, all those differences just get broken down and people can truly embrace that oneness.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, psilocybin, to get back to psilocybin that we were talking about, is an important part of my practice. And I will, you know, make tea, psilocybin tea, twice a year, maybe three times a year. And that is, by the way, that is a magic potion. Magic potions are real, but they generally involve a psychedelic substance. So when you make magic mushroom tea, you've made a magic potion that for a limited time in a limited space facilitates a direct connection to the other side. And the last time I did this, I had a very long conversation with Shiva. You know, and I have no connection to Hinduism. She was just who showed up that time. But the message was, it's all just a joke. It's all entertainment. Stop taking life so seriously, right? It's all just a big joke. God wants you to laugh. And I loved that. I loved that message so much. But it was the same to me, is the same kind of message about death. Like, don't take death so seriously. Don't be so afraid of it. This is all just the cycle of life and death and rebirth. And yeah.
It's and beautiful. Yeah, and she has such a cheeky grin. So I love that, you know, and you can actually see when she's happy. I mean, she will show you and she will smile at you. And she is so, yeah. And that's why people are saying, oh, sex, don't mix sex and death. Don't. She's not judging all this stuff. I love this message you got from Shiva. And that's the same kind of messages I've had from Santa Muerte. Stop getting upset about things. This is just your ego, right? If you realize through death of the ego, this is your ego getting upset. Chill out. And it's not always easy. Some people have been, like I said, through hugely traumatic experiences, and I'm not telling them to brush that off. I'm absolutely not. But if we can, you know, try and find the humor and things. And that's what I love about Mexico, is people have so much humor, even when they're living in dangerous spaces, and people are able to laugh so much, and they'll laugh about death. You know, I remember calling a friend of mine and saying, look, I'm thinking of coming, but is that chapel still there? That lady was getting a little old. She's like, oh, don't worry, she's not dead yet. Ha 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 ha. And I was like, oh, you're hilarious and you're joking about death. So, you know, people have taught me sort of that we can find humor in death as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I've got to get rolling. I have a class to teach. Cressida, thank you so much for being on the podcast. This was awesome. I love talking to you. And we'll definitely have to do this again soon.
We'll have to do this again. We've got so much to talk about. So yeah, it was wonderful. And maybe sometime take that mushroom tea and then do a podcast. That could be crazy.
that's in the works. All right. Okay. We'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Okay. Bye.